You are listening to Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTO 104.3. And tonight's story, I have two short stories, actually. The first story is by Ursula Wills Jones, and it's titled Vusi Makusi. And I will give you another chance to get settled since we started a little early. And I'll be right back with the first story for tonight. Please stay tuned. This is Ms. Jean with Telling Tales here at KTO 104.3. Tonight's story, Vusi Makusi, is by Ursula Wills Jones. Vusi Makusi was a terminal optimist. He was an optimist even though he lived in one of the poorest places in the world, even though he only owned one suit and his trousers didn't reach his ankles. When he had finished his education, Vusi Makusi decided the civil service would be a good career. The man in charge took one look at Vusi and saw immediately that he would never amount to anything. "You know, I think I have just the post for an ambitious young man," he said. Vusi spent a long time on a bus. The bus shuddered and shook and clanked, passing deeper and deeper into the jungle. Eventually it came to a halt in a swampy hollow, entirely surrounded by forest. "But where is the village?" asked Vusi. The bus driver pointed. "What day does the bus return?" "Saturday," said the bus driver grumpily. Vusi had spent the last 20 hours telling everyone on the bus about his new job, and the driver was sick of him. Vusi tramped through the hills to the village. He knocked on the door of the chief's hut and sat down to wait. The whole village came to stare at him. When at last the chief appeared, Vusi stood up. "Good sir," he said, "I am the new government officer for this area. I have come to bring peace, prosperity, unity, development, and education to the people. I have come to show the beneficence and munificence of our great and benign government. Whatever the village needs, whatever it be, roads, schools, seeds, water, tractors, teachers, or doctors, the government is willing to provide. All I must do is make a list, and it will certainly arrive." The chief stared at Vusi, then began to laugh. He laughed. Ah, ha, 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 ha. People rolled around, slapping each other in mirth. "Young man," said the chief at last, "it is some time since we have had a visiting comedian." "But, sir," said Vusi, "I am quite serious." The chief laughed some more. "Good, sir, please desist. Cannot you see that my respected mother, 83 years old, is in pain from your joshing? Do you want an old lady to break her ribs?" he cried. That night, there was a special dinner for Vusi. It was only the next day, when Vusi began touring the village with a clipboard, that they became worried. "He is a lunatic, and they have cast him out from the city," said the priest. "He is a spy and is making that list so they can steal everything," said the chief's wife. "I think he has hit his head, and that is why he's strange," said the blacksmith. When 28 days had passed, Vusi visited the chief. He explained that he had worked 4 weeks in a row, was due 8 days' leave, and that he intended to visit his elderly mother. He also asked to borrow the chief's umbrella and offered to buy him a new one, just as soon as he got to the city, where he could draw his shiny new government salary from his shiny new bank account. The chief, shaking his head, agreed to lend him the umbrella. Vusi went to the chief's wife and asked to borrow a blanket. Then he next went to the village blacksmith and asked for a knife, since it was a long walk to the bus stop and the path was overgrown. Then he walked off, carrying his battered suitcase. "Surely somebody should tell him there is no bus," said the chief. They waited and waited. Eventually, the blacksmith went down the valley and found Vusi waiting by the dirt track. "He says the bus will surely come soon," explained the blacksmith, "and he does not want to miss it." When 2 days had passed, the chief himself descended and tried to talk sense to Vusi. He returned, shaking his head. The priest tried, with no more success. "He is immune to reason," said the chief's wife. "Therefore we must appeal to the heart or the eyes. Send the potter's daughter. She is the prettiest girl in the village." The potter's daughter returned, shrugging hopelessly. "Send the priest's niece," suggested the blacksmith. "She is not perhaps quite the prettiest, but the smartest and sharpest of the women, clever with words." The villagers worked their way through all the young women till there was only one left. "Well, she might as well try," said the chief, yawning. Then he went inside for a nap. The girl stormed off down the path. She was so angry to be considered the plainest and stupidest girl in the village that when she saw Vusi, she threw a mango stone at him. "Idiot! Lunatic!" she shouted. "Do what you want and see if I care. Do you think anyone will even notice if you sit there till you turn to stone?" Then because she was so upset, she burst into tears. Vusi stared at the girl. He fell to his knees. "Dear lady," he said, "you must forgive me. This excessive emotion can only have been brought on by the burden of concealing your true feelings. If I seemed oblivious to your affections, it is only that you had not declared them. Why, if I had known that you loved me, I should never have behaved so callously." "What good news! When the bus arrives and I go see my mother, I shall tell her I have met my future wife." "Praise the Lord. Until then, perhaps you will be so kind as to pass a little while with me, waiting." Since all this was a good deal more pleasant than being told she was plain and stupid, the girl consented to wait. Vusi began to tell her about the future and how wonderful everything would be. He told her about the tractors and clinics and schools and water pumps and fat cows and plump chickens and huge vegetables and smiling people and tin roofs and television and clean toilets and post offices and telephones and paved roads and airplanes and skyscrapers and regular timely buses to all rural destinations. In the morning, it began to rain. Vusi put up the chief's umbrella. It rained and rained. A small red monkey appeared and sat on the far side of the track. It looked sad and bedraggled. "Look, the monkey is waiting to get on the bus," said Vusi. "But Vusi, he does not have a bag or a suitcase," said the girl. "You are right," agreed Vusi. "Therefore, it is expecting relatives to arrive on the bus and is waiting to greet them." After a while, the monkey began to shiver. "Vusi," said the girl, "either let the monkey come under the umbrella or chase it away. I cannot stand looking at its sad face any longer." "Why, of course it must come under the umbrella," said Vusi. "After all, the monkey, too, is a citizen of our great and glorious nation." The monkey, Vusi, and the girl sat under the umbrella. It went on raining. A great pool built up in the hollow. "Surely," said the girl, who was coming to understand how Vusi thought, "the people of our great nation should not have to wait for buses in the rain. Since you are the government officer, you could cut branches and make a shelter while we are waiting. This would be a service for all the people." "I see you are not just a pretty face," said Vusi, nodding. "Only if the bus comes while I am cutting branches, you must shout and call me, for I do not want to disappoint my elderly mother." So Vusi took the knife and cut branches and made a shelter. Vusi and the girl waited in the shelter. The monkey sat in the roof. Another day passed, and another, and another. The rain ceased briefly. The chief of the village came down the track. He shook his head and went home. The pool in the river continued to widen, and Vusi caught a fish for dinner. Nothing passed on the road. Nothing whatsoever. Vusi and the girl waited in the shelter. They waited so long, the girl had a baby. "How happy my mother will be when she sees the child," cried Vusi. "Surely, my husband," said the girl, "people will be waiting for buses here with children. I think they must have a place to lie down and sleep quietly." Lucy took the knife and cut more branches and made a second room. Outside the door, the mango stone sprouted and grew leaves. A second monkey moved in with the first one. The monkeys, too, had a baby. It rained and it rained. The river rose and fell. Lucy, said the girl, one day this will be a busy bus terminal. There will be many passengers, and whoever can provide food and drink will have a profitable business. I think I had better prepare and plant corn for porridge and maize to make beer. Then you will not only be government officer, but I will be a businesswoman. So she turned up the soil by the riverbank and planted a garden. Then she went in the hut and had another baby. I do believe I must have misheard that gentleman, said Lucy one day. Surely it cannot have been Saturday that the bus arrived. It must have been January. Only there has been none for 3 years now. They will arrive all at once, three of them. That is a famous habit of buses. Lucy, said the girl, if there are three buses loads of people, I do not have enough food. Besides, a good restaurant has a variety of dishes. Go into the jungle and catch a pair of those birds we have seen, and I can keep them. That way we will have enough for everyone. It is a good idea, said Lucy. Only if the buses arrive and I am in the jungle, you must ask them to wait. The girl stayed by the roadside waiting. Nothing passed. Not even the villagers came anymore. After 5 days, Lucy returned, clutching two startled guinea fowl. I have not missed the bus, he asked anxiously. His wife reassured him. It is the weather, said Lucy. It has been very strange recently, and I think the bus will not come this year. Nonetheless, since they are so unpredictable, it would be a shame to leave this spot, especially since we have made so many preparations with the hotel and the restaurant. That year passed. Lucy said to the girl, you must build a fence to keep the guinea fowl in. It will not do if they are run over by the buses. Another year passed. Lucy said to the girl, the fish do not stay in the dry season. What if the bus comes when there are no fish? How will I feed the passengers? You must build a dam in the river. Another year passed. The girl had another baby. Certainly this service is very unacceptable, said Lucy one day. When the bus does come to take us to the city, I will write a letter to the Minister of Transport. The only good point, my wife, is that every week my salary is building up in my government-run bank account. Another year passed. The bus did not come. The mango tree began producing very good mangoes. They waited so long, Lucy began to worry about who his eldest son would marry. Then one day a strange noise began in the jungle. It seemed to echo around. The bus, cried Lucy's children, for they had heard from their father of this strange monster. Over the edge of the hill came a white helicopter with the letters UN painted on the side. It put down in the roadway, and four nervous-looking soldiers in blue berets climbed out. Then a couple of scientists in white coats clutching clipboards, their faces covered with hygienic masks. Finally came a politician in a suit holding a handkerchief to his nose, and a general clutching a tin hat. They stared at Lucy. They stared at his wife and at his seven children. I see, said Lucy. They are upgrading the service, and now there are helicopters instead. That is why we have been waiting so long. What are you doing here? Said the politician. Why, we are waiting for the bus, said Lucy quite calmly. But how did you survive the Civil War? Asked the general. Civil War? Said Lucy, looking puzzled. Yes, the Civil War that wiped out half the population, said the politician. Certainly we have not seen any soldiers, said Lucy, shaking his head. But even if you escaped the Civil War, how did you survive the famine that killed half the survivors? Asked the general. Famine? Said Lucy's wife. She looked around the mango trees, the millet bushes, the coops with the fat guinea fowl. Okay, even if you escaped the war and the famine, how did you survive the virus? Asked one of the scientists. Virus? Said Lucy. What virus? The deadly virus which wiped out all the survivors of the war and the famine, said the second scientist. You know, the incurably fatal one to which no human or ape was immune, except for the extremely rare and almost extinct lesser red-haired lemur. A small monkey climbed onto Lucy's shoulder and began to nibble his ear in a familiar manner. Lucy brushed it off distractedly. "It is strange you say this," he said thoughtfully. "I cannot remember any of us being sick." "Lucy," he said, his wife tugging at his elbow, "invite them to dinner. They can be our first customers." "Certainly," said Lucy, nodding. "Fish or guinea fowl?" But the politicians and the scientists and the soldiers looked quite terrified and cringed back towards their helicopter. "We have to go," said the general. "Certainly we must get you out of here," said the politician forcefully. "You will get all kinds of things, aid, assistance, help, clean clothes, a house, electricity, a proper toilet, everything. You will be famous. The newspapers will interview you." "Why, thank you," said Lucy politely, "but we cannot leave. We are waiting for the bus. However, there is one favor you can do for me. Do you have paper and pen?" Lucy sat down and penned a short note to the transport minister complaining about the unreliability of rural buses. Then he put it in the politician's hand. After the helicopter had gone, Lucy seemed a little downcast. "Famine, war, diseases. Surely it cannot be true of our beautiful country," he said. "Perhaps they are lying," suggested his wife. "Let us walk to the top of the hill and see what is really happening." Lucy and his wife walked up the old road that no one had used for years. It was covered in boulders, cracked and broken. Rivers had torn it apart. At last they came to the top of the hill. Vanishing into the distance was a wasteland of flattened trees, burnt tanks, ruined villages, and abandoned fields. Lucy and his wife walked home, hand in hand. Lucy was rather quiet. His wife went to get dinner. Lucy sat down, his wife and children around him. He looked very thoughtful. At last he spoke. "My wife," he said, "I know that sometimes there are those who have considered me a fool. Yet I cannot but think that, as I said, everything I have done has turned out for the best." And then he applied himself with some appetite to a large plate of guinea fowl. You've just heard me read Ursula Wills Jones's Lucy Makusi. Hope you enjoyed that story. And I will be right back. This is Ms. G giving you Telling Tales here at 104.3 KTO in Juneau, Alaska. This is Ms. G, back with Telling Tales here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Hope you enjoyed that last story. She's a wonderful storyteller, Ms. Ursula Wills Jones. My next story is by Timba Magarimbo. It's called Family Favorite. Imelda normally made 3 treks per year from her rural homestead into the city of brilliant neon lights, Harare. Normally, she could migrate to the city limits between mid-August and mid-October before she rushed home to check on her summer season preparations. Sometimes, a baby would be clutched at her back, stuck in there in the midst of cotton cloth baby carriers. Then she would migrate in mid-May to end of July. Of course, she returned to the city around 17th of December and returned by the 22nd with not only Christmas preparations but her husband in tow as he started his industrial shutdown, only to return around the second week of January. According to the city, going to the city helped many such folk keep in step with modern society, which they brought back to the rural areas. In terms of social chit-chat, she was then more knowledgeable than the stay in the rural areas women. She could take the bus at Buyu Business Center. This was a ramshackle collection of shops in the Eastern Highlands, about 100-odd kilometers northeast of the mountainous capital of the Eastern Highlands, Mutar. Here, mist and clouds worked side by side with the latter, working throughout the day and the night, while the former worked during the night and early morning. The former disappeared when the golden brown face of the sun started appearing, turning into its brilliant, godly splendor. At most times, rain descended on the mountain slopes like steam. Those that were not rain facing had rivulets, which they converted into channels of irrigation ditches and canals that kept them unaware they did not receive as much precipitation as their other neighbors. Transport was not a problem, with much agricultural activities in the valleys, like growing of tobacco, maize, green beans, bananas, and in the hills, apples, avocado, etc. The traders came in trucks and lorries. When they missed the bus, village folk hitchhiked on the lorries, trucks, from Mutar or further on to Rasapi, and thence to Harare. There was no need to go to Rasapi via Mutar. There was a straight road. From Buyu, she would have tracked up through the mountain ranges for a distance of about 10 kilometers, which took the better part of 2.5 hours up and down hills. Her homestead and those of her neighbors looked like tourist resorts with streams of crystal clear water running through rivulets. Theirs consisted of about 4 round huts thatched with grass and one brick under asbestos square shaped bungalow with 2 verandas on sides, south and north. It had 3 bedrooms and a large living room. Bananas, avocado, pears, peaches, mangoes, and green reddish apples adorned trees like Christmas decorations. Fruit trees dwarfed houses with avocado trees appearing like giants jutting out of mountainsides. She waited for the bus with other people of her area. One went every day to Mater and returned the same day. They called it a daily. Unlike the Harare bound ones, which differed in that they left the Eastern Highlands early in the morning and reached Harare in mid-afternoon or early evening. These had pairs which crisscrossed on the same route. The bus soon rumbled along. It was the first of 3 buses which were available in that area. The problem was by the time it reached their business center, there was no sitting capacity left. She dutifully clambered aboard, took hold of both handrails, and waited the start of her journey. "Good morning, Mother of Roger," one neighbor said, pushing backwards because even standing capacity was limited. "Good morning, the one whose totem is the river," she replied. "How are you this morning?" "I am fine, neighbor. Are you going to Harare?" the other asked. "Yes, my dear," she replied. "I am going to Vihenge in Rasapi to see my cousin, brother's daughter, who wants to marry. The man she eloped for was here last week, so I need to make talks between him and my cousin, brother, possible," she said. By the time the bus reached Rasapi, she found a seat with relief. She held her 4-year-old son in her arms as they headed first for Harare's Imbar bus terminus, from whence she collected another bus headed for Chitungwiza, Unit J, to be precise. "We are almost home," she said to her 4-year-old. The sun was setting. "I don't see Papa," he replied. "Soon," she replied, stepping off the bus near the major road that led to Seki 7 Primary School. She hoisted her traveling bag with clothes and a white sack with a mixture of raw bananas, avocados, and etc. He walked near her hands in his pockets, looking around him because the views changed each time he came in tow with her. Her husband was not at home, even though she had telephoned from the rural service center. She was hospitably received by his fellow lodger, whose wife provided her with food and comfort. Her husband arrived around 9 in the evening. There had been a maintenance problem, and he had been taken by surprise by the amount of time he had had to take. It was true, she thought, because a Mazda B2200 truck with company names had dropped him off. They thanked their host before retiring to their big room, where mother busied herself making a snack for her husband. The boy was the youngest. By that virtue, he was the family favorite, too. He partook of better goodies than the rest. While the rest took turns at odd intervals to visit the brilliantly neon-lit city, he visited it every time his mother came. 3 weeks later, he and his mother prepared to vacate their Unit J stay in order to head back for Buyu. His father had prepared their groceries, which consisted of 2 huge white sacks filled with necessities. They were escorted to Imba Musika, where the father and his friend kept vigilance until the buses started off, because Imba was rife with thieves, pickpockets, and confidence artists. Soon they arrived home. The elder siblings played a welcoming party, which they had done for the past 4 days, expecting their arrival. Schools were over for the day, so 3 of the siblings stood by the bus stop. Dust gathered around the bus when it stopped. Tendrils of smoke rose and pushed spectators away. The moderate drone of the diesel Cummings engine was a very welcome sound. Thought the eldest in the family who was doing the second form. What? Asked the younger by 3 years. I guess that Thomas will not remain family favorite for long, he suggested. You dislodged me several years ago. I don't see why, Roger, the other replied. Just a wild guess, Fatima, Roger replied. Some things were better left unsaid. The family favorite was soon down from the bus. They hoisted their groceries, sharing the load amongst themselves. The other siblings were happy to see their mother back, and the groceries were welcome, too. The youngest insisted on walking first before alternating between being carried and walking to their homestead. The fact they arrived in the evening when the sun was down, nobody bothered to care. Everyone was happy mother was back. The homestead had an adult who looked after the children when the mother was away. The adult was a female relative who obtained sustenance from the family in return, too. Where would she get milk, bread, food, bars of soap, and sugar for her 2 children? There were 17 goats, excluding kids. There were 3 cows in milk. There were 2 off-milk heifers. Besides that, there were 7 calves, including 4 that had been weaned. For drought power, there were 3 large oxen. The last bull for the family had been delivered to the butchers. They made another parade in mid-July as their mother clambered aboard the bus alone with her suitcase. The last in the family shed tears because he was used to accompanying her. Roger had the little boy in his arms as they waved their mother away. "Shush, Thomas, you'll be back within 3 weeks," he said. A few crystal sweets and the tears stopped coming. They trekked off. They made a welcoming party when news had arrived that mother was arriving exactly 9 weeks after she had left. Roger was in the lead. Secondary school soccer practice had been on. Roger was a fullback. Tom, Roger had whispered, you shall not boast any more. Wait till I tell mother that you mistreated me, Thomas said as the bus appeared on the hill. Its dirty yellow color and animal fenders in front were the most welcome colors for the siblings. Why was it that it seemed the bus traveled in a bent position? I doubt she will be listening, Thomas said. Their mother clambered off with her belongings. There was a small bundle that she did not let go of. I surely told you, Fatima, that the favorite reign is over. Prophetic, Fatima replied. We have a new sister. You've just heard me read Family Favorite by Temba Magarimbo. This has been Telling Tales with Ms. G. Until next time, good night.